Hello, and welcome to Season 9, Episode 37 of the Make Ubuntu Great Again podcast. It's Tuesday, the 8th of November, and today we're going to discuss what's been happening in the news and the community. I'm Alan, and joining me this week is Martin.
Hello, Martin.
Hello, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good. Mark, hello, Mark.
Hello.
And super talented guest presenter, John. Hello, John, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Super. I'm great, thanks. What have you been up to, John?
So I've been playing with a thing called homeassistant.io, which is a little Python script that does home automation-y things. So it'll turn on and off light switches and turn up and down your heating and things like that. It's all very interesting.
Magically, does it have little men inside that come out and turn your thermostat up and down, or do you need to have some kind of a computer to do this for you?
It's actually quite useful. It's on a Raspberry Pi, which I've got plugged into the USB power source, USB plug on my router, and an Ethernet cable into it. It does things like Nmap scans your network and checks the ARP addresses or the MAC addresses for your wireless adapters and stuff like that to detect who's in the house and all those sorts of fun things. It's all really, really quite cool. Lots and lots of text editing, though. So if you don't like text files, don't play with it. But otherwise, it's really good.
And is this family-friendly, like Home Assistant, like other people are able to use it, or does everyone in the house need to have their own SSH key?
At the moment, it hasn't been thoroughly wife-tested. But she quite likes the idea of the fact that we've got Wi-Fi enabled plug switches, so it will turn lights on and off, and theoretically also the heating. But I've not been allowed to try that one yet. So at the point at which that starts to become a thing, I'll actually show her how it works then and see if she's okay with it. She did freak out a little bit about the fact that obviously because it's detecting who's on the wireless network, she then said, that means you can work out when I'm in the house and I'm not. Are you stalking me? So that didn't go down very well.
Don't worry about that. The cameras do that for me. I it's funny. I had this conversation with Claire the other day about she had no idea that wireless light bulbs existed. And I talked to her about Philips Hue light bulbs and, you know, the ability to turn the lights on when you arrive home. Same kind of things like geofencing around your house and all that kind of stuff to automate. And I was quite surprised how much she was like bought into this idea of automating some of the control systems of the house. So, yeah, I'm kind of glad I had that conversation, because I'd quite like to do this, and I'll have a look at Home Assistant as well. So that's quite cool.
The irony about it all is that about 3 months ago, I was having a conversation with my brother who's got the Philips Hue stuff, and I was ranting and raving about how dreadful they are, and it's the worst thing you could possibly have in the world. And then my light switched itself on, and I was like, I really hope he doesn't spot that's not on a timer.
So what have you been up to, Alan?
I've just literally been helping Sophie just this minute, helping Sophie with some of her homework, making a game in Scratch. And I forgot how great fun it is to create little games in Scratch. We created a fun little thing for her homework, and the delight on her face once we created this little game and she added some sound effects and, made the difficulty quite hard. And I just said to her just before I came in here to start recording that I want to hear what scores her school friends have got as well. Obviously, I want to beat them.
Brilliant.
But yeah, so Scratch, that's it. Should we get on with the show?
Let's. And now it's time for the news. And first up this week, the Internet Archive is 20 years old.
Hey, happy birthday, Whee! Internet Archive.
Yeah.
Everything's turning 20 at the moment. Have you noticed that?
Everything?
Yeah, we had like KDE and GNOME and all sorts of things just recently. We've had lots of things being 20 recently.
Is that because people started communicating online and coming up with cool projects.
Yeah.
About 20 years ago.
Yeah, it's all to do with the internet probably, isn't it?
It's quite embarrassing when you look through the internet archive and like see
see your own web pages.
Yeah, your own web. Yes. I used to think some archive. Of the things on my slash
popey.com.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Fortunately, you can't use the internet archive to look at GeoCities. Otherwise, I would be cringing somewhat chronically.
You can actually.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no.
Yes, it's one of the new features that they've added as part. Yeah, I had a GeoCities account. Didn't everyone have a GeoCities account back in the day?
Is it still like the archive used to be that they would use commodity computers? And it was, I remember seeing a photo maybe 5, 6, maybe more years ago, where in a building they had a bunch of commodity desktop PCs that were fairly cheap. And all the data was spread across all of them in such a way that if any part failed,
those days are long gone. They really have a very sophisticated data center. And as part of the 20th anniversary, they added full text search to the Internet Archive. So now there's like 9 million text items that you can now search instantly. Yeah. But they did that. It sounds like they've done that. I don't know if self-hosted, but it sounds like it might be on AWS. But they have got this massive 22, I think it's 12 servers, each with 22 cores. And just the index is like, you know, 4 terabytes on SSDs for this, you know, full text index database.
From the looks of things, they're using Elasticsearch and stuff like that. So it's wow. Again, it's all the latest buzzword bingo.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'd just like to say I'm now looking at popey.com from 1999. From 1999.
Yeah, is there cat pictures?
22nd of December 1999. Added lots of new pictures to the cats page.
Nothing changes.
You were a pioneer of the internet, man.
Well, yeah. Other words could be used, but yeah. John, save us from this.
Okay, so it's apparently now finally legal to hack your own devices, and I quote, even your car. The DMCA, there were some new exemptions that were limited to 2 years from October 28th, and they quietly kicked in. So the Library of Congress's Copyright Office added in October 2015 that apparently was discussed in season 8, episode 35.
Yeah, good memory. Well done.
What can I say? I've got.
You're clearly a fan.
I am indeed. It now means that Americans can now hack their own devices without fear. Basically, it's things like security research and. There's a few different ones, but the key one obviously is the security research, and I think it's predominantly been picked up because of the research into the consumer devices, like the car hacking and stuff like that, and also you know, those sorts of things where the DMCA was being used against security researchers. Yeah. Indeed, right.
Yeah. And I think alongside the security research, the other application is if you are a auto repair outfit. Modern cars have so much of their systems controlled by electronic devices and computers now that you may have to reverse engineer those in order to fix modern vehicles. So I think it's a provision to enable third parties to do that kind of repair work as well.
Right. I recently saw a review of some American car, and they were talking about how it had been limited to certain features had been switched off. I mean, they were in the car, but they'd been switched off, and you had to take it to a main dealer and pay, you know, some exorbitant amount of money for someone to basically flip a bit inside your car. And he was able to take it to another garage who had some special software that I don't know whether he got off eBay or wherever, and a special plug it into the car, and away he goes and flips the bit, and now his car is de-restricted. And it just seems ludicrous to me. I mean, I know we've talked about this before with the tractors in the States and agricultural people getting annoyed that they can't control their own tractors and can't, you know, take them apart and reconfigure them and such because they're like controlled remotely. And it does worry me a little that people like Tesla have a lot of remote control over your vehicle. But I like the opening up of this. I like the fact that, you know, it's my device. I paid for it. It's sitting on my driveway. I should be able to do whatever that I damn well please with it. Which I think is fair.
Yeah. Mm.
In other news, Zotac have announced a small form factor bare bones gaming PC, packing an Intel i5-6400T CPU, NVIDIA GTX 1060 mobile GPU, dual gigabit Ethernet, and lots of USB ports, and up to 32 gig of RAM. It retails for £875, or about $1,000. It's quite cute. It's like a tiny little... Yeah. It looks like a NUC, but yes. Not...
It's a lot slimmer than NUC. It's smaller than my Skull Canyon NUC, for example. I'm really interested in this because I'm looking for a device to go in the front room to be a games console, and I want it to be a Steam games console. So I was looking, and I've got a birthday coming up, and I'm feeling I'm going to give myself a present. I was looking at this long and hard, and yeah.
The review looks, you know, pretty favourable. I mean, it's not going to blow anyone away. It's not the most powerful GPU in the world. It is a mobile GPU, but it's designed to be decent, small. And,
yeah. And they have a larger version of this as well that is water-cooled and has a GTX 1080 in it and an i7 processor.
Golly.
So, yeah, so I saw that and I was like, don't look, don't want it. Yeah, but awesome. They've got some decent kit out there actually, and some smaller boards with lower power CPUs that would make really decent home routers. So, yeah, there was a lot of stuff on that page that caught my eye. Mm. Right, next up, there's been an industrial tribunal for not a taxi company, Uber, that has ruled that their drivers are employees under UK law.
So what does this mean for Uber drivers?
Well, it now means that because they are employees under UK law, they have certain rights such as holiday pay, paid rest breaks, and the minimum wage applies.
Oh, right. So they can't... Well, basically, the rate they get, presumably after expenses, has to be at least minimum wage.
Mm. For every hour worked, I imagine.
Yes. Yeah. Mm, it's interesting. It'll be interesting to see what that does and what the pushback is against that. Because it's, I mean, the same thing with, there's quite a lot of companies that have a similar model. Deliveroo is another big one that's taken off in the UK.
Which was that one?
Which is a sort of a food delivery company. So they have a network of restaurants, like restaurants who don't have their own delivery service, basically, and people go and pick up food for them and bring it to your house. But they have the same argument that those people aren't working for Deliveroo. They just happen to have a bike and the app. And just,
I just happen to be passing.
Yeah, they just happen to be passing. And if they pick up some food and get some money from them in exchange for it, then all the better.
I'm conflicted about Uber because I absolutely love the service. The fact that, you know, when I arrived back from Holland a couple of weeks ago and we'd had flight confusion, I ended up at a completely different airport and I could just press a button on my phone and a man turned up in a lovely car and drove me, whatever it was, 80 miles back to my house for less than any other cab company would have done it. In comfort, offered me a drink, and it was a super comfortable, clean car, and he wasn't like most... I'm going to...
taxi drivers listening.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've been in that situation where he sat in the back of a cab and someone's being unreasonable in their discussion topics, and this just wasn't that, because, you know, I've had plenty of cabs where people, the driver feels compelled to talk to you and voice their opinions at you, and I don't find that in Ubers. I find that they realize that you're going to press a little button when you get out of the car that says whether you rate them highly or lowly, and places that makes an impact on how they interact with you on the journey, which for normal taxis it doesn't do. So I feel conflicted, because obviously Uber's, you know, not a great business, and they certainly have some flaws, and maybe they don't pay enough, and maybe they don't pay the right taxes, but they provide a magnificent service, and I find that incredibly frustrating.
And this may pave the way for similar rulings elsewhere in the world, because there are other countries and states in the US that are pressing for similar changes. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. And I wonder if it will crush Uber or whether they'll ride it out and survive.
Next up, Intel's Vulkan driver has got a 30% performance boost on Linux, meaning that it's now faster than OpenGL. So this is the new hotness in graphics APIs, Vulkan.
Yes. This story comes direct from the making people aware of things that support my predictions episode at the end of the year.
Oh, good. So, yes, there's a couple of articles on Phoronix where they've been doing benchmarking.
What's interesting about this is specifically for Intel devices, more specifically on the Skylake hardware this was measured, but unlike some of the other performance improvements that have been demonstrated through technical demonstrations and what have you, this was done using Dota 2, so it's an actual game and the performance improvements are, you know, significant for a real-world application using this technology.
I love the way you called Dota 2 a real-world application.
Well, it is an application. It just happens to be an entertaining one.
Okay, John, save us from this.
Well, hang on. Before that, and also the Vulkan programming guide has begun shipping as well. So if you're out there and you're wanting to get into graphics programming, then that's probably worth picking up.
Is that a book?
Yeah.
A book.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So the Harvard Business School has looked into Wikipedia articles, has applied its spotlight of red and blue colours to the articles, and decided that actually the articles are in fact as neutral as the Encyclopedia Britannica. So they've basically gone through and picked out all the words that look somewhat Republican and all the words that look somewhat Democratic, according to the American standards of those terms, and decided that it's about purple, which is nice.
Yeah, it's interesting. They've also kind of looked into the behaviour of editors and seen who's attracted to what articles, and it seems like basically they start off with Democratic bias and they gradually become neutral, and editors tend to be attracted to articles which are not necessarily the ones which they would agree with, and it kind of sorts itself out over time. That's quite nice.
Yeah, that's interesting. I like that. Meanwhile, in retro gaming news, a Nintendo $60 NES Classic appears to run Linux. It's a mini games console based on a single board ARM PC. They call it a mini, like NES, and it really looks like a mini NES.
Yeah.
It's a tiny, tiny little Nintendo.
It looks like one quarter size of the original.
Yeah.
And it's got quite a pretty little GUI on it, a front end, and a whole load of games built in. There's no way for you to add games. There's no network connectivity. There's no SD slot or card slot. So you can't add games, but there's a whole truck of licensed games.
It's $60 for 30 games.
Yes.
So that's $2 a game. And some of those games, I mean, it's got Bubble Bobble on there, for example, and Ghosts and Goblins.
Right, but some would argue that all of those games cost zero if you pirate them somewhere.
But you don't get to play them on your TV on a cool little thing with a real NES controller.
What, like a Raspberry Pi running RetroPie?
Well, I'd been considering doing that, but I'm actually more inclined to get one of these because, as you say, they're legit games. And also the reason that I've been looking at stuff like RetroPie and this is for my daughter, because my daughter doesn't know any better. If she plays this, this could be the cutting edge of computer gaming as far as she's concerned. So I'm thinking about getting this without consulting.
Hang on a second, Martin. I just need to phone Childline. I'll be
So does this mean that when you finally switch over to, what was it, Dota 2, it'll blow her mind?
Yes.
Somebody needs to explain to me
what a Dota 2 is, because I don't actually know. I just know that it's a legit game, apparently.
Super. I think John's got the final news, I think.
So, and finally, preparations for surviving the total annihilation of Earth are underway.
Okay, good.
So it sounds dramatic. Essentially, there was an exercise in public disaster planning based around a fictitious asteroid, which will be spotted by astronomers, given a 2% chance to impact Earth on September 20th, 2020. So that gives you lots of opportunity to buy up your fresh water supply, etc. a few years later, it will be seen to be coming back around in orbit, and there will be a 100% chance it will hit just off the coast of Southern California. Now, again, this is all fictitious, so you don't actually need to go out and, you know, panic buy your gold and whatever else you need to do. But basically, it was an exercise just to see what they would do based on if this thing were to occur, what would they do?
And was the what they would do is put their arms in the air and go ah and run around screaming, or?
I think it would actually have looked exactly like the scene from Airplane.
Brilliant. And I think that's a great place to leave the news.
And now it's time for some community news and events. And first up, the Canonical Design Team has released the Yakety Yak release artwork. Now, there's been some criticism in some quarters of the internet that the recent origami-based designs are simple and perhaps they were a last-minute thought. But this document shows just how much effort went into designing this artwork and the T-shirt as well. So it's definitely worth a look to see how this all evolved from the origami design all the way through the different iterations to what was finally put out.
Good Lord, yes. I see what you mean.
Yeah.
Someone actually made a paper yak.
Yes.
Super. Moving on, speaking of bovine animals, Dirty Cow was live patched in Ubuntu within hours of publication, according to a blog post on insights.ubuntu.com. So this is related to the live patch feature that is now available in Ubuntu 16.04, where you can get updates to the kernel. Specifically, very select critical security patches kind of ninjaed into your system so that you don't have to reboot. It's not necessarily for everyone, and it's a paid service with the opportunity for 3 free installations for community users. But I think the blog post is more to highlight the fact that here's an example of how a very publicly visible critical bug was fixed without users realizing it, without them having to reboot, which is, yeah, pretty good.
Cool. Next up, Mythbuntu, the Linux distribution, has been discontinued.
That's
basically
a shame.
It sounds like that they've just... their development team has disappeared over the years and they no longer have a viable team to maintain it going forwards.
Mm. I blame Davey.
Sad news.
The thing is, Mythbuntu was one of those things that Myth TV was always a real pain to set up. And Mythbuntu really made it an awful lot easier with the tools that they provided and a slimline desktop and it auto booting into Myth front end and, you know, discovering your Myth back end and all that kind of stuff. It was a great idea, and it worked really, really well. It's just one of those things that needs a certain critical mass of developers to keep the thing going, and unfortunately they don't have that critical mass anymore.
It is also unique in that it's the only Ubuntu flavor that has their own plugins for Ubiquiti that has custom steps to do all of that, you know, front end, back end configuration.
Oh, really?
As part of the install. Yeah
Wow, that's a shame. I know the people who worked on it are still around. I know Thomas Mashos, I still see him in Hashubuntu on IRC providing technical support to Ubuntu users all the time. And Mario Limoncello, who works for Dell, works on Ubuntu installs at Dell. So, you know, he's still involved as well. It's just they don't have enough people to keep the thing going, which is a shame, but it was good while it lasted.
So, with more news from insights.ubuntu.com, Ubuntu Core 16 has been released, and this is the IoT focused or base system that they're recommending. It delivers foundation for secure IoT, and it's basically it meets industry and regulatory requirements for updates, operations, and security. Provides mechanisms for ISV manufacturer and enterprise control of updates, and enables app stores and ecosystems for devices. And what's more, it is coming to a Raspberry Pi near you.
It's on a Raspberry Pi very near me. These two ones just over here.
So have you got it on a Pi 2 or a Pi 3 or both?
Yes.
Both of those,
yes. Both of those, yes.
And I have recently had delivery of a Dragon Board 401C, which is also one of the other supported devices. So I've had the Dragon Board for about a week, but the power supply turned up today. So I should be having a play at that at some point. Yes. Next. The iconic text editor Vim celebrates 25 years. There we go. See, there's another 2025 celebration. I told you it was all going on. It's all in the 20s right now. It was started by Bram, is it Muldenar? Is that the...
That'll do.
That'll do. And he started this project to create a text editor for his Amiga in November of 1991.
I never knew it was an Amiga.
What? No.
Yeah.
Vim was started on the Amiga.
Yeah, yeah. And it was originally called Vi Imitation. And then the feature set of Vim exceeded Vi for its 2.2 release in 1993, and that's when the acronym changed to Vi Improved.
Hmm.
Yeah. Excellent. But that's quite amazing. I mean, 25 years old, still going, but most importantly, the same core contributor has been running the project all that time. That's some commitment, isn't it? 25 years working on an open source project.
And it's still releasing with the updates.
Just like last month or the month before, they had their recent release, didn't they? Yeah.
That's amazing.
Long may it continue.
Debian 9, codenamed Stretch, will drop PowerPC support as a release architecture.
Controversy.
Yes, the internet went mad.
Note,
internet did not go mad.
So the keywords there are release architecture. What this means is there won't be ISO images made for the PowerPC architecture, but whether the PowerPC devs remain in the main archive or move to the ports archive is a decision that still needs to be taken. So all the stuff is still there for those of you that want to deb bootstrap your own PowerPC system. You can still do that.
But I guess the fact that it's less of a priority because it's not a release architecture means that maybe bugs that only affect PowerPC might get less attention.
Yeah, and that's kind of happening already. I see this on, you know, the PowerPC stuff in Ubuntu, which obviously large parts of that are derived from Debian. Because it's an old architecture and there aren't many people using it and there's not many new systems designed on that version of PowerPC hardware, there's Endian bugs and stuff that, you know, take a long, long time to get resolved. So maybe it's time to just quietly bow out. Yeah.
Put a pillow over its head. Moving on, Mark.
Last bit of community news. There is a new menu editor for GNOME called Meow.
Yeah, this looks quite good. There's one for XFCE. I forget the name, which I really quite liked. And I saw this, and it's quite powerful and intuitive and good for organising that sort of stuff.
Why do you need to edit your menus?
Well, if you're using a proper desktop environment, you see, it's all about the menus, Mark.
Well, it's so the word menu, I mean, you could argue launcher, same thing. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, if you wanted to create an icon on your menu or launcher,
yes,
which launches an application with specific parameters, some desktops, such as Unity 7, don't actually provide that as a feature. There's no menu editor built into Unity. You have to go ferreting around and edit .desktop files. So having graphical way in which for you to manipulate those .desktop files is quite a neat feature. In fact, my very first bug that I filed in Unity was, oh my God, I can't edit the launcher icons. And yes, I think that was marked won't fix. Cheerio, bye-bye. So yeah, it's quite nice to have features like this.
Cool.
So in community events, we have the Ubuntu Online Summit, which is on from the 15th to the 16th of November 2016.
Oh, good Lord, that's next week.
Yep. It is. Yeah. If you want to know more, go to summit.ubuntu.com.
And if you'd like to schedule an event, go to summit.ubuntu.com, because it's looking a little bit sparse at the moment.
Mm. Right. Next up, we have the Paris Open Source Summit 2016. This is the premier European event centered on the free and open source sector. And that's in Paris in France, also next week. And you can go to parisopensourcesummit.org.
And then we have UbuCon Europe, the very first European Ubuntu conference. Two full days of talks, workshops, demos, exhibitions, and hopefully great food. I also hear that the opening keynote is going to be delivered by Jane Silber, who's the Canonical CEO. And there's going to be some social events on the Friday and the Saturday with meals and stuff, and it should be good fun. That's all taking place at the Unperfect House in Essen, Germany from the 18th to the 20th of November. And you can find out more from ubucon.org. You have to register. Register now. Register now.
Yes, I recently registered and booked my flight and hotel and everything, and I'm looking forward to that.
I did all those things as well. I'm not sure if I'm sleeping on a park bench or in a hotel yet, but I'm definitely going.
Super. Also, a bit further away is FOSDEM 2017, free and open source event for software developers to meet, share ideas, and collaborate. It's in Brussels, as always, in Belgium. Mm-hmm. And it's from the 4th to the 5th of February 2017. Find out more at fosdem.org/2017.
And for those of you wondering why we're putting an event in there for February, it's because we won't be doing podcasts in February, so we're telling you about it now.
We love getting your feedback, so please send it to us. Even the pointlessly mean stuff makes us laugh. If it's short, tweet us on @UbuntuPodcast. If it's less short, but please no essays, email us on show@ubuntupodcast.org. If you'd like to discuss some of the things we talk about with other listeners, post on our shiny new subreddit at reddit.com/r/UbuntuPodcast. Or you can just leave a comment on the relevant show notes on our website, ubuntupodcast.org.
At this point, I would normally do the outro, but I feel terrible because I didn't introduce John, our guest presenter, properly at the start of the show. So I feel compelled. John.
Hello.
Hello. That's John.
Awesome. Awesome work, Alan.
Oh, dear. So, John, thank you for joining us. And will you be around next week by any chance?
I think I might be able to manage that, yeah.
Oh, that's super. Because next week we're going to be discussing the Thing Explainer competition, announcing the winner, and we'll bring you some command line love. So it'll be lovely to have you back, John. Maybe we'll talk a little bit more.
Maybe we'll find out who you are.
Shocking.
See you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
I think that John really is a nice guy.
Oh, thank you.